Welcome back to the Hacking Neurodivergence Podcast, the show all about people living their lives and hacking their neurodivergence. I'm your host, Kelsey Terry, and today I connect with a friend of mine. Her name's Erin, and we talk about getting diagnosed with neurodivergence later in life, how to be a parent to a neurodivergent child, and we also cover the value of therapy. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Erin. Welcome to the show, Erin.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Today, we are going to go relatively unscripted. Normally, these conversations are a bit more scripted, but you and I have known each other for some time. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to chat through a number of topics ranging from your upbringing, navigating being a mom, and then ultimately hearing more recently from your therapist that you're neurodivergent. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Let's go.
So talk to me about, what were you like as middle school, high school, Erin? What kind of kid were you?
Ooh, started getting into a little bit of an emo phase, and then, or late middle school, and then broke out of that, and I hit all the genres. I was a kicker.
Okay.
Here in Dripping Springs, that's what we called the
dance team?
No, the cowboys and cowgirls. We were kickers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I was on FFA. In fact, I was the advisor for FFA, which is the Future Farmers of America.
Yes, yes.
I was the owl. We would go do competitions around all over Central Texas. I was also a skater, wearing, the baggy jeans and the Converse, and had my skater boyfriend that would do little kick flips after school.
So did you skate as well?
I pretended to skate, but no. I would get all into it and buy the cool wheels and get the cool stickers for underneath the skateboard, but I never actually skated, never actually got on the board.
Okay.
And I knew about the grip and what kind of grip to have on top of the board. I knew all of that, but no, never actually skated. And then I dabbled a little bit in the preps, which we called the popular people.
Okay.
Didn't like that much, so I got out of that. And then I think I landed the majority of my high school with the stoners.
Okay.
And that's where I spent. But I was friends with all the big groups. So
you'd move from group to group?
Oh, yeah.
And, you were able to connect with those people.
Yeah, literally one day I would wear my Ropers and my Justin boots and my Roper, or my Cavender pants and my Roper boots and cowgirl hat. And the next day I would wear my skater attire and sit with one group at lunch, sit with the other group at lunch.
And was that adaptability or you sound very flexible and, being able to interact with all these different groups, was that something that was always present in your life or was it maybe a necessity because you were seeking to fit in with various groups?
I think it was, I had to adapt.
Okay.
Because, yeah.
Tell me more about that.
I don't know. I've talked about it in therapy and I can't really pinpoint when, where, why. I had, born and raised in Dripping Springs. So kindergarten through sixth grade, I had the same two friends because they were in my class every year because it was two classes. And then you get out there into sixth grade, which is, middle school, and there's other kids around, and I'm just flopping around trying to find where to go. I also wasn't big on... I go to FFA, so I don't like the skater kids. I don't like, I hate that they skateboard around us during lunchtime. I didn't care. I liked watching the skaters skate, and I liked going to the FFA things, and I liked the stoner kids. But I just liked the variety of all of that, I think.
Did you struggle academically or were you a strong student?
Oh, no, I struggled very hard.
What made school particularly hard in terms of the academia element of it?
Looking back, I know why, but I struggled very hard with math. That was a big thing with my dad. He was an aggressive father. So we'd be trying to do homework at night and he would just get so mad at me that I couldn't understand it. Why don't you just, it's simple math. It's simple mathematics. And, you just can't get this. And it was always chalked up to, you're just lazy. You don't care. You don't want to put in the effort. So that kind of bled over with, I loved writing, I loved English classes, all that, but then why put in the effort and do all that if I'm not putting in the effort in math? You know, why not just not put in the effort at all? So even though I enjoyed my English classes and I loved my history and my science, I just had this this persona of, yeah, I don't care. Fuck it, I don't care. So high school, Chris, my now husband, did the majority of my work for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that is amazing.
In fact, he's the only reason I graduated, by going to the teachers and saying, like, look, just let her pass or she's going to be here next year. Back then, we had to do what we called a portfolio, where it was a collection of all your work or big pieces of your work. And then you had to, like, present that to a board of your teachers and talk about how you've grown as a student at DSISD. And no, thank you. I didn't do that at all. Did zero work on that. And at the very the last night that it was due, Chris crunched it and did it all for me. And then somehow I wiggled out of, manipulated my way out of not having to present it, and passed high school basically with that.
So you mentioned you know now why math didn't work out for you, or it was a harder topic. So with the wisdom of today, what do you like see back at that time about
I think
math?
That's part of the neurodivergent.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it just, I cannot explain how it does not make sense to me. It's not because I'm stupid, because I know now that I'm not stupid. It literally just does not make sense when my dad, even like young, drawing, you know, nicks on the paper, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 4 times 2. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What are you telling me? And now, you know, working as a bartender, I ask all the time, what's 20% of 150? And they're like, Aaron, you just move the decimal over. You just do the nothing. That literally does not make sense to me. I can't understand that at all.
So you would rely on calculator or maybe memorization of like key figures?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can I still have the, when I have to do multiplications, I pull up the image in my head of the multiplication table. 2s, 3s, 4s, yeah.
So is it fair to say that you're a visual processor? Like, right, you just said you have to, you choose to recall an image.
Yes.
And then you look upon the image, and that's how you get your answer. Have you always been visual?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one of my superpowers, I would say.
I would say so.
Yeah.
So high school is coming to a close. Chris helps you crunch for this portfolio review, which sounds like a parole board review. Like, it's like, I've been on good behavior. Please let me leave prison.
Look at all this stuff that y'all made me keep.
I've never heard of that before.
Down. Small town.
So what happens after you graduate from high school?
I got a whole bunch of graduation money because that's what they did back then. I don't know. I think that's still a thing. But my boyfriend at the time, Bud, and I decided to go rent a house at the beach. We decided we wanted to be beach bums and live at the beach, which is so dumb because I cannot stand anything more than the beach. I hate the sun, the sand, and the salt. I hated it, and I cried every night until he brought me home.
Until you left. Mm-hmm. Which beach was this?
It was like Port A.
And okay, we had these Port Aransas. Yes,
he's going to be a construction worker, and I'm just going to work at, you know, the grocery store there. Mm-hmm. Throughout high school, I had like every job available in Dripping Springs. I worked at every place that was open in Dripping. So I was like, yeah, I can be a waitress. I can work at the grocery store. I know all of that. I'm well-versed in the employment field out there. No, it was terrible. I hated it. And then so we moved back and hopped around. We tried to live in Marble Falls for a while. Mm-hmm. But I was pregnant the whole time. So, and then had a kid. So that kind of squashed all hopes and dreams.
So walk me through life in, let's say, 25 to 35. So you have a young child at this point, that's maybe 5 or so.
5, yep.
What are you doing? What keeps you busy? Who makes up your community at this point in time?
So, well, that is from 20 to 25 is where
You went back to Chris?
no, I was still with Bud, but at 25, I uprooted everything,
Okay.
left my entire community behind, all of my friends that I had been working with for a couple of years at a daycare, all of Bud's family, which is a big family, all of their friends, the whole big circle that was Bud and I's life for 8 years, with a 5-year-old at this point, and left it all. And me and Chris finally got together, after years of just knowing we were in love, but I'm with Bud. I don't know what to do about that.
I'm trapped. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trapped. I can't wait till Corbin's. It was a joke around the friend group because Chris was always around. He was
Okay.
Bud and I's best friend. It was always a joke that, when Corbin's my son, when he turns 18, I'm leaving Bud and just going to go out there and like date whoever. I just didn't know that that was an option. My mom and dad are still married. Everybody that I knew in high school, all their parents are still married. Like, a breakup with a child wasn't a thing, wasn't even on my radar. Anyway, and then until it was at 25. So leave Bud, leave that whole world, move in with my parents momentarily till Chris and I can get our own place. Chris and I move in together. He moves his publishing company to Waco. Then we move to Waco, get married, and live the married life for a couple of years until 30.
Now, again, looking back with the wisdom of today, how do you think your neurodivergence showed up in your mid-20s?
I think, well, my OCD has always been right there on the corner. And, everybody who knew me back then just knew that I was quote unquote weird. I've just always been the weird one. And, my certain little things that bothered me or that you couldn't do around me, I'm very vocal. I will let everybody know. Don't do that. Just random weird things.
Like what?
Like if so back then hanging out would be like hanging out in our garage, smoking and drinking and hanging out. And if I'm sitting, like you can't stand if you're around me. Like it's like sit down. Like I'm not looking up at you. I don't, you're towering over me. That bothers me. So it was always just a known thing that like if we're hanging out in the garage and somebody comes and is standing next to me talking, they're like, oh shit, sorry. And they'll sit down real quick. Again, just small, weird little things. But I was just always the weird one. And like, hey, I'm hungry meant like, oh God, now we have to find food now, or she's gonna get really pissed. It's not a hangry type thing, because I can get hangry if I go long, long periods of without eating. But like when I say I'm hungry, that's like I need to eat right now. And then there's, my weird things with food. I'm a very picky eater.
What do you like to eat?
It's hard to explain, but I don't like wet food.
Okay.
Perfect example of that is like tiramisu. That's not
Too
right.
much moisture.
It's wet. So, and then people ask, well, what about soups? And I can do a soup if it's like full broth, like thin.
But not chili.
If I eat a chili, I can do that.
Okay.
It's weird. Like I can also do tomato basil soup, even though that's thick, but I could never, do a potato soup, even though it tastes good. But that's supposed to be a potato. That's a solid. You can't make that a liquid.
So when it came to these things that, you were very passionate about, some might have viewed that as, a degree of rigidity. Were your friends accepting of that, or were they like, oh, freaking Erin, like she can't do X? What was it like at your community level when like those edges were experienced by other people?
I hope that, I mean, I, well, I think they were just like, that's just Aaron.
They were very
Yeah,
understanding.
that's
That's
just,
great.
because like I say, I am vocal. I apologize. I'm sorry, but you can't stand when you're around me. I'm sorry, but you can't eat when you're around me. I can't stand the sound of somebody eating around me. I can get violent. But I'm nice about it. I'm not mean, but it's just, no, you can't do that. And you know, like my OCD stuff, I think growing up, and say growing up is in the 20s and stuff, that was just always, oh, that's just her being weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I almost feel like now it would be like, oh, she's just being difficult. Like if I were to take my 25 to 30 year old self and put her in this world,
mm-hmm.
I would be viewed as being difficult or being needy. But I don't ever felt, I don't feel like that was the case back then.
Okay. And for the listeners who are not watching this on video, Erin, would you tell us, how old are you currently?
I'm 43.
Okay.
Yes, 43.
I don't know if I would have guessed that myself.
Is it the blue hair?
It's the blue hair. It's the blue hair and the badass tattoos.
Oh, I do have that.
So you experience this and you have, you know, these preferences when it comes to, let's say, food as an example. Mm-hmm. How do you think about food even now when it comes to a variety of textures? Do you try to push yourself to like, oh, I'm going to overcome this and I really want to expand what I'm eating? Or have you made peace and said like, you know what? I eat what I eat. This is who I am.
Oh, I've definitely made peace with it.
Okay.
Because there was like every once in a while, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try this. Mm-hmm. This is weird food to me, but I'm going to try it. It's never good. It never ends well. So I don't do it. I just, even when people are like, Erin, you don't understand, if you would just try it, it's so good. No, it's not. That's a lie. And
well, it's just not right for you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I'm not going to like it.
How many years have you been married to Chris?
Got married in 06.
Okay. And
so you do the math on that one.
I'm not going to do the math on that, but thank you for the 06. Well, I guess I graduated in 07, which I guess exposes the age difference.
Yep.
But you've been married for some time. Yes. And you have two beautiful daughters with Chris.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say has been the key to the success of your relationship and being in that partner relationship for so long?
I say all the time it was because we started out as friends first.
Okay.
And I think being a wise old woman now, it is that friendship that, you know, he got all my quirks. Mm-hmm. Quirks. He got that. And that's another thing that I can't say words a lot. And it didn't bother him. It was okay for me to be who I was. I didn't have to really hide. Even the, you know, I didn't really hide much of who I was. Again, I was very vocal about what bothered me. But he understood that and he got that. And then, you know, he's a hard person to mm-hmm. get along with. And that's never bothered me. We just work really well together, have the same ambitions and everything.
So do you think it's some of the success has been because he's been hyper-flexible, or he just like understands your preferences and we just work around that?
He's just very understanding.
Okay.
Like in general.
Yeah.
Like he's just one of those guys that can put himself in other people's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
He can look at different perspectives of things. Except when it comes to the whole, I'm right, you're wrong in our marriage, but he's still good about that. But yeah, I think he is just, you know, able to work with it, and I'm able to work well with him.
And so in raising your two beautiful daughters with Chris, how would you say you have observed like being neurodivergent as a mom? Like maybe when you compare yourself to the other moms, you know, that at middle school or whatnot, how do you think neurodivergence has appeared in your parenting? If at all?
Yeah, I would say that, like, well, first of all, I was terrified to have two daughters because I'm not a girly girl. I don't know how to do the hair or anything like that. Even though I've taught myself or tried to teach myself, I've tried to watch the YouTube videos on how to do hair. I just can't get my fingers to work right. That's just a no for me. But I struggle with not feeling like I'm loving them correctly.
Hmm.
And I don't know why that is, because I do obviously love them fiercely. I have definitely, you know, that mama bear and
mm-hmm.
Love and protect and everything. But I've often felt, even with my son Corbin, that I don't have that maternal instinct. I don't have that motherly love. which I've gone over in therapy because I don't think I had the motherly love growing up.
Okay.
So I don't know why I feel like I lack that.
Do you think like you observed it in other parents and then you're like, this is not how I parent, or I'm curious, or was it maybe you compared yourself to Chris and the way Chris shows up?
Yeah, Chris is way better of a father than I am. But like seeing my friends with their kids, like super openly, publicly, I love you, hugging, you know, when they're little kids, toddlers running around, the hugging and the picking up and the kissing and the oozy boo-boo baby, I mm-hmm. love you so much. I don't do that. I don't have that. I don't have, it's very uncomfortable for me to say, I love you. That's a forced sentence that I have to say, phrase. Hugging is uncomfortable for me. I don't like to do that. So I don't have that with my kids mm-hmm. per se, but I don't think that they're lacking. I think they just know that mom loves us in her own way. I hope so. I mean, I hope so.
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
Let's fast forward. You elect to go into therapy where you ultimately discovered or came to this conclusion that you're neurodivergent. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what caused you to seek out going into therapy in the first place?
Just going through, I think after so many years of marriage, mm-hmm. I had just, well, Chris and I both kind of just quit our corporate jobs. And I was working at the bar. I just was kind of struggling to, I didn't feel like I was knowing myself. As before, I was the parent that got up at 6 a.m., dropped my kids off at school, went to work, picked my kids up at 7, did dinner, went to bed, rinse and repeat. And now I have freedom. And now I have 3 days a week where I can just do whatever I want. And then I work at this badass job that I love. And I'm meeting people that I would have never been friends with, you know, in my other life, as I call it. And after about 2 years of that, I was like, but wait, what am I doing? Who am I, essentially? I, you know, in high school, dated Bud, broke up with Bud, immediately got with Chris. I remember sitting at Desert Door one day and saying, I don't even know what kind of music I like. Because I like
tough.
Yeah, I like the kind of music that Bud listened to. Then I like the kind of music that Chris listened to. And not that they were like, here, listen to this, but I just... Okay, there's a song on the radio. Cool, whatever. So I started going to therapy to see, I don't know. It was at that point where it was mm-hmm. like, this is where therapy needs to happen.
Sure. And so you were seeking a change. This isn't working. Wanted to unpack who you were as a person, independent of these men that have been in your life, or obviously Chris is still in your life, and discover who you really are. So then fast forward to however long within that relationship, this therapist kind of shares their observation of, hey, Aaron,
yeah,
bring me to that moment.
Well, so it's a running joke in therapy with my therapist. The first day that I went in there, she, you know, why are you here? What's going on? And I said, well, I'm a psycho bitch and I don't want to be a psycho bitch anymore. She was like, well, I don't think you're a psycho bitch. So for a year and a half, we broke down on, why do you think you're a psycho? And I'm like, well, because I do this and I think this and I do this. And finally, about a year into it, so about 6 months ago, she was like, so you do know that you're autistic, right? No, what are you talking about? I mean, I would never have labeled that on me. I mean, you know, and she pointed out the certain things, you know, the sensitivity to the clothing, the sensitivity to, you know, textures that I touch, just quite a few different things, you know, low on the spectrum. And I, okay. And then, you know, during therapy and stuff, she's like, she'll throw out the, well, that's a neurodivergent, you know, typical trait. And I'm like, wait, what? So that was fun. Finding out that the whole math thing was like, yes!
I'm not lazy.
Yes! Can you call my dad now?
So you have, like, she makes this observation, like, you know this to be true, don't you?
Yeah.
And you're like, you're having this, like, excuse me moment. What did that feel like? Was that validating? Was it further confusing? Did you just go home and Google all night?
I Googled, like, all, yeah.
Bring me to your headspace right after or in the middle of that session when she, like, makes that proclamation.
When she said that, I was thinking, she just doesn't know what she's talking about. Why would I have that? Because I guess in my head was, well, that's the reason why. That's the reason why I am this way. That's the reason why I think like this. That's the reason why this bothers me. It's not just because I'm a psycho bitch. It's like there's actually a reason. That was hard for me to swallow. So yes, then go home and Google all night long. And I remember, like, pointing out, oh my God, Chris, look, this is another thing. And he's rolling his eyes and thinking, like, this isn't real. This is just one of those, like, made up Google things for woke people to blame everything that's weird about them on, oh, it's this disorder. It's still hard for me not to think like that. But the more I know and the more I go through in therapy saying that, you know, it's okay to think this way, to feel this way, to have these little oddities about me, that it is a neurodivergent
trait.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is a thing.
Yeah. It 1000% is a thing. And so you do the interview, or like, that session happens, you do some Googling, there's some varying opinions at home around, like, was this a real thing?
Yeah.
Would you say Chris holds the perspective that this is just Erin, like, she's not autistic? Or do you think he's, like, maybe come to a place of more agreement?
I think,
or do you
now,
think he sits with it?
Now he's come to, okay, this might be a thing. Because I keep pointing out things that a normal person wouldn't even be on their radar.
Sure.
That wouldn't even, the way that the bed sheets are tucked in, nobody cares about that, but I do passionately care about that. And the fact that Chris doesn't care about it is a big deal every night. And I just don't understand why he cannot just do it right. So now he's kind of like, okay, maybe it is. And through therapy and, like, talking about my children and everything, we've kind of, my therapist has kind of been like, are you seeing the same thing in my oldest daughter?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, so we're kind of starting to see it in our oldest daughter. And that's easier for Chris to be like, okay, if you put that label on, that makes more sense with her.
What you're seeing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That we can understand that.
Okay.
Because this is our daughter. We know her. We raised her. This and that shouldn't bother her, shouldn't be an issue, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make sense to us. But if you put if she's slightly on the spectrum, then it makes perfect sense.
Okay.
And Chris is a logical guy. He can look at that and be like, okay, this is how we have to change the way we think when we're parenting her or trying to understand her. Because she's not thinking the way, you know, how to raise a teenager, the book
sure
is telling
would work,
us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have some of these realizations, these insights, you're like, this seems like that. What changes have you made to your parenting? I know that there are parents that listen to this show because they find encouragement in, you know, listening to neurodivergent adults talk about their life. How do you show up as a parent with, like, that level of awareness, and yet, like, you've also lived that life yourself?
Yeah. So one of the things that we struggled with as parents is Catherine would become obsessive.
Okay.
About things. Most recently was shopping. She would put 40 different things in her Amazon or Sheen shopping cart and then come and show us and scroll and look and show us this stuff. And we're like, stop, we're not buying this for you at all. And she's like, I know, I'm just doing this. But obsessively, all day long, like on a Saturday, all day long, constantly coming in. Look at this. I've added this to the cart. She would create wish lists and remodel and redecorate the entire house and come and show us this stuff. So before knowing that, we would get, you know, stop. Get off your iPad. Go outside and play. That was what we were always telling her. Go outside and play. She's just not that kid. She's not want the last thing she wants to do is go outside. And so we had to put limits on her. You can show us three things that you want to buy. And that was, you know, through therapy, it was how to parent that. That was, you know, boundaries is a thing. Also, she's very artistic. I am not. But my therapist said to, like, connect with her. She's distant. She spends a lot of time alone. She's not really into the whole family thing. Family movie night is kind of not her thing. She would much rather be in her room drawing, listening to her music. She will obsessively watch the same show over and over for weeks on end. Like, literally the same episode, just on repeat.
Which show?
I would say for 2 years, it was The Flash.
Okay.
So she would watch the entire 28 seasons of The Flash. And then for an entire Saturday and Sunday, she would watch the same episode over and over and over again. She always has her earbuds in. And it's always, well, I say always, but she goes through phases where it's always the same song. For months, all she listened to was, it was a Christmas song by, I'm drawing a blank on that one. But so I have to, like, give myself, listen, I tell her, Catherine, I will give you an hour. We will sit down and paint. Let's paint something for an hour. But I can't do much more than an hour. Like, that's a struggle for me. But that hour means a lot to her. So it's a give and take.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
I love that. I love that you're meeting your child where she is. You're also putting up boundaries because, I mean, as she grows up, you, like that example in middle school with your fellow peers,
yeah,
might not go so well. Like, hey, let me show you 86 things that I love on Amazon.com. Right? Other people outside of your household don't have that level of patience. And so I think it's really essential to train some of those boundaries at a younger age, because then that helps them understand how to navigate the world more effectively. And I would think that that limit of three items is also like, okay, well, I'm going to make my case. This is why these three things are the absolute best thing for our living room.
Mm-hmm.
And I was that kid. I would like sell my parents at the grocery store. I would be like a walking salesperson. Like, Mom, I really need these Oreos. Here's why. You know, did you know that all these kids are doing, you know, the twist off challenge and then they lick them? I want to be like the other kids. Don't you want me to be?
That's very familiar.
Yep. So I'm seeing a lot of similarities in those stories.
She also, to us, is rude the way she communicates with her friends.
She's rude to her friends? Okay.
Yes. And we've had to... So she was on the phone with her friend. We were driving to school. Her friend calls. We were driving to school. Her friend calls. She picks up the phone and says, why are you calling me? And I'm sitting in the car and I'm like, oh my gosh, stop. Yeah. Why are you being so rude? Mm-hmm. No, seriously, why are you even calling me? I'm
sure, like, instead of text?
Yeah, I'm tapping her. I'm like, Catherine, why are you being so rude? Well, I don't understand why are you calling me? Bye. And hangs up on her friend. And I'm thinking, I say to her, I'm like, Catherine, why were you so rude? She was like, I wasn't rude. Why was she calling me? Why didn't she just text me? And I was like, oh. You know, and like replaying it in my head, her tone wasn't rude. It was just a, why are you calling me? That didn't make any sense to her. Like, why are you calling me? So we kind of have to, like, instead of jumping on her and being like, don't say that kind of stuff. that's just who she is. And she has a great friend group. She was bullied so hard in elementary school. Ugh, that was so rough. But 6th, 7th, 8th grade, she has found this, we call them the little nerds, and they're so nerdy. I love it. And she's really found her little community there. She's experimenting and, putting on a little bit of makeup every once in a while. And it's fun. It's fun to watch her kind of grow with that.
Okay. Now we're going to shift into our lightning round. You ready for that?
Okay.
What's a song or playlist or maybe artist that you keep on repeat? What's something you're listening to right now?
Well, I mean, Taylor Swift just dropped her new album, so that...
Are you a fan?
Yes.
How have we not talked about this?
We have talked about it so much. You flew to...
I mean, yes, I...
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't know that you, too, were a Swiftie.
I am a huge Swiftie, yes.
Oh, my gosh. We have more to discuss off camera.
Uh-huh.
What advice would you give to your younger self? Ooh. Knowing what you know now. Let's say you're 17.
Don't get married. Soon. Don't have kids. travel first, Aaron. Jeez. It's just find what you like. Don't tie yourself to people just to feel normal.
When you're flooded or when you're flooded and overwhelmed, what's your technique to self-regulate?
Well, it used to be self-sabotage and drugs and alcohol, but I have recently learned my tools, as I'm a visual person and I have my little Iron Man mask that comes down and has all my little meters going, to step back. I step away, whatever the problem is, and just kind of breathe. I have this visual where I can see myself as a bigger person, like literally as a giant, and telling my little person that it's okay and just calm down and this will work out.
What is your favorite neurodivergent purchase? Like something that you own that you think like you definitely have it because your brain works differently than other people?
For 30 years, I have had a chain.
Okay.
Like literally off your ceiling fan, like a chain.
Yes.
That I spin on my finger. And it's not the same chain because I've lost that. But I constantly buy chains on Amazon. My entire family knows not to ever touch my chain and not to get too close to me when I'm chilling at the house because I will hit you in the face with my chain. But my chain is my favorite thing.
How long is your chain?
It's like this long.
I'm looking like 12 to 18 inches. Yeah, okay.
But I spin it on my finger.
Mm-hmm.
I have misshaped fingers because of it.
That's hardcore. That is so hardcore.
It's very, very strange.
I was a lifeguard and I had a whistle with a similar, length. And you twirl that around my fingers. I miss that whistle, I will say. But no, you can't whistle at people in public when you're not a lifeguard.
Stop.
Walk, slow down.
Move out of the way.
Okay. Something new that we're doing is you have the opportunity to ask the audience a question, like something for them to reflect on or think about. What is a question that you might offer listeners today? We get to hear their answers. Or they could just reflect on it and they don't have to answer. But on Spotify and YouTube, we can actually see the answers people offer up.
Well, I think the whole concept of neurodivergence, again, hard
with
words.
It's a tough word. It's a big one.
It's a big one. Is relatively a new thing. So looking back through history... And famous people, are there people that, you can think of that might have been diagnosed or classified as one of us?
Yeah. I think there's plenty on that list, but I'd be curious to hear what people have to say. Final question is, any parting words of advice for the audience? Just general.
Yeah, you're not a psycho bitch. It's taken me a year and a half in therapy to realize that I'm not a psycho bitch.
Amen.
I'm just
to that.
A little weird.
Yeah, we're all just a bit weird.
Yeah, and I love it.
After our conversation, I would like to say that I have two key takeaways. Number one, the value of a great therapist is impossible to overstate. The transformation that Erin experienced was pretty remarkable because she found that counseling partner, a licensed therapist. And something we discussed after the show, after we were done wrapping up our recording, she talked about this desire to encourage everyone to maybe consider counseling. And so maybe this is your sign to book that appointment with a licensed therapist to unpack your neurodivergence and identify how you're showing up in your life or the way you're connecting with others, or maybe not connecting with those people. Number two, I thought it was very, very interesting. The boundary that she put up with her daughter was a healthy boundary. They aligned on a number of items to show inside the Amazon shopping cart where her daughter still felt heard and could share the items that she wanted to buy. But it was also a manageable number of items so that Erin was still in a position to connect with her daughter. All too often when it comes to boundaries, we often institute those boundaries like way too late in the game. And what I want to highlight here is Erin saw the situation, enforced the boundary that still facilitated a means for the two to connect. So I thought that was pretty cool. If this episode was helpful to you, consider sharing it with a friend or following, subscribing to this podcast, depending on the platform. Different verbs apply. It really helps the show more than I can effectively express. And with that, we'll see you guys next week.